you know, there's guys who are like so jealous of your story right now. What advice do you have looking back at it?
Luck.
Welcome to the Hunt Backcountry podcast, presented by Exo Mountain Gear. This podcast and the gear that we produce at Exo Mountain Gear share the same purpose: to make you a more capable, confident, and successful backcountry hunter. Straight to the point, no fluff, and no BS, this show is all about providing you with valuable information from experienced hunters. To learn more about the podcast or about our backcountry hunting packs, please visit exomountaingear.com. You guys, welcome to episode 95. Man, what an exciting time. As we release this, we are dead in the middle of hunting season for so many of us. Archery season, September, whether you're chasing elk or mule deer, guys out chasing bears, guys going up north to chase caribou, moose, all kinds of things. Sheep hunting, man, it's an exciting time. Speaking of it, Steve and Lenny are in Colorado as this episode is being released, hunting with the crew from Born and Raised Outdoors. The crew from Born and Raised Outdoors are our guests tonight, or at least part of the crew. You guys, this is such a fun episode. We hear some great stories, and we hear about a huge project that's coming together. It's part of the reason that Steve and Lenny and the Pure Elevation guys are with the Born and Raised guys, part of a 45-plus day adventure that's going to be documented, shared on film for free. You're going to hear all about it in this episode. And it's just a fun conversation with some great hunting stories as well as some tips for you guys. Hope you enjoy this one. Let's get right to it. Cody Trent, welcome to the Hunt Backcountry podcast. How you guys doing?
Awesome.
Yeah, doing great. Except it's smoky outside. We got, there's 56 forest fires here locally.
56?
56, yeah. It's a lightning strike. There's only like 1,400 acres that are burning, but yeah, a lot of spot fires from pretty intense lightning storm here last week.
Yeah. And so just for listeners and context and everything, where are you guys located?
We're in Southwest Oregon. Specifically, we're here in Roseburg today at the Born and Raised headquarters. But Trent and I live, I'm in Roseburg and Trent's Myrtle Point.
Right on the coast.
So I'm sure that most of our listeners are familiar with the Born and Raised crew to some extent. But I guess go ahead, Trent, why don't you kick us off and just kind of give us some history, give us some context for the guys who might be new.
Yeah, sure. So we started about 10 years ago and started out making these DVDs, and we thought they were the coolest thing ever. And we were told back then, hey, you need to put your stuff on YouTube. And we looked at the guy and pretty much laughed in his face and said, yeah, YouTube, right. And so had we taken that advice,
you'd be rock stars.
We'd be rock stars right now, instead of nobody knowing us. So no, it's been a hell of a journey. And Cody and I were just doing it full time just for the last 6 months. We took the leap. And so, yeah, it's been great. We're throwing everything on YouTube now, so everybody can watch our stuff for free. We're getting in more to the how-to kind of side of things also. You know, people, we just did DVDs for entertainment in the past, and so now it's more of a showing how we did it, how we did the bike trailers, and how we did, you know, how you do the gutless method on an elk. I mean, simple stuff to us that have been doing it forever that a lot of people would, you know, it would be knowledge that a lot of people would like to know. So yeah, there's just so many avenues out there for what we've done and what we can put out there. It's pretty cool. It's really neat.
Yeah. The whole BRO mantra is to entertain, educate, and inspire. And so we're just like everyone else doing, you know, just sharing our adventures is all, and just happen to be packing a camera around. So yeah, it's been a fun, wild ride for the last 10 years and super excited for the future.
Yeah, absolutely. So I know that there's a ton of new stuff coming, which we'll talk about, but I'm just kind of curious for listeners who might have the DVDs or maybe seen one or two of them that you guys have done over the past 10 years. Are you recycling some of that content and getting it out there on YouTube if guys want to check it out? Or maybe they haven't seen the DVDs and want to go back through some of your catalog and check stuff out?
Yeah. We're slowly We've got about, what, 60 videos up now?
I think there's 70 now.
70, something like that? Yeah, up on YouTube now. So what we did was break down a lot of those DVDs into just single hunt segments and then put them up on YouTube. And then that combined with what we're filming now and what we're doing now. So, yeah, we don't have all of our old DVD content up, but a lot of it we do that is free to watch for anybody. So anybody can go check out our goings-ons for the last 10 years. Shenanigans.
Cool. Man, that's awesome. You guys, it's not only, like, I mean, as you said, it's just fun. Like, what you guys do is entertaining. I don't know. I just don't get into much hunting video stuff. Don't watch the shows. Don't have the channels, things like that. But I've always been drawn to your guys' stuff because it's just super authentic and just a ton of fun. You know, it's cool to see.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. Appreciate that. Yeah, we definitely kind of set out to try to do something different. We started with the Roosevelt elk and looked everywhere and didn't find any good documentation of Roosevelt hunting. And so we started there actually and kind of cut our teeth with that in the filming side of things. And then which enabled us after that to go out of state and hunt. And it's just been a crazy journey and then film it and document it our own way. And it's been a good time.
So some of the most recent videos that you guys are releasing on the YouTube channel, kind of working through and releasing videos from a recent, well, somewhat recent Colorado backcountry elk hunt. Cody, you hammered a monster. That's for freaking sure. Tell us about that hunt and kind of some of the latest videos that are out there.
Yeah, that whole hunt was pretty insane just because, you know, here we, you know, when you hear about Colorado, most guys, you know, the Colorado 5-point, the Raghorn 5-point. And
easy now.
Yeah, I was going to say, I have one of those.
Yeah, no, and so.
Cody, he shoots this bull on like, what, day two, and now all of a sudden he's high and mighty.
Yeah. He barely fit through the door.
Well, Trent, this is Trent's year for 6 points. So,
joke number three of the day.
Just for Trent's killed the most bulls out of all of us in our group, and he's the only one that's not killed a 6-point. So,
Man.
Probably the most skilled hunter of all of us. So size doesn't matter, right?
It's just any little weak and ill spike that comes in, I just can't resist it.
Dude, man, that's I don't know. Like, that's public land hunting.
No, and that's us. Like, we're not about horns. I mean, yeah, of course, all of us want to kill something big because it's you know, the quintessential summit, I guess. But for us, really, it doesn't matter. We hunt for the brotherhood, the meat, you know, feeding our families and the whole adventure of it all. And for us, you know, it's not about being a big one or a small one. It's that excitement of the whole hunt and everything that goes into it. But so that hunt was our first true like backcountry hunt where we backpacked for, well, it ended up being a total of 14 days or 15 days that we were in there.
Yeah.
Sorry, I want to cut you off there. How did you guys come back to the truck, come back to a trailhead, or even go to town at all, and how often through those 14 days? Because that's a long freaking time.
Yeah, it was a long time. So we planned, basically the initial deal was we're going to go for 4 nights because our theory behind it is if we have not killed a bull in that period of time, we're either going to be moving or we're going to be packing meat. So that was how we kind of planned that out. And so actually on day one, on the way in, Trent almost killed a good bull that first night. And then that night was bulls screaming everywhere. We were kind of up on this knob and it was like 360 degrees, bulls waking us up. And so the next morning it was one of the most unbelievable days of elk hunting I've yet to still experience. Yeah. I mean, I think we heard, 200 to 300 bugles that day. I mean, it was just, it was just pure chaos. And it's like, oh, we screwed that one up. We're going to go after another one. And so when we killed that first bull, I mean, Trent was filming. He was there with me. And when that thing stepped out and it all unfolded, we both were just like, oh, my gosh, what just happened? I mean, had no idea of what kind of caliber was in there. And you know, I mean, it was icing on the cake. And as we're breaking that thing down, We had another bull, the same class, come in on us. Must have smelled that bull while it was dead. Came right to us inside 20 yards for 7 minutes, and it's another 360-inch 6x7 standing there. And I'm left-handed, 31-inch draw length. Trent's right-handed, 29-inch draw length. And no bow.
To say it didn't cross my mind would be an understatement, but I did not pick up the weapon.
Yeah. So anyway, so kind of to get back to your question, so we actually hung that bull, had we carry the citric acid spray. You know, that time we were there mid-September, cool nights, I mean freezing at night. And once we got that thing hung, we quartered that night, pulled all the hamburger meat off, all that off the rib cage, backstraps, loins, hung that up and sprayed that citric acid. We ended up hanging that thing ended up being 5 days. Because basically so the next day Trent killed a bull after that. So now we had two bulls in the back country and we're trying to figure out, okay.
They're both about 7 miles in, yeah, somewhere in there.
Mine was a little closer.
Yeah.
And so now the theory of, well, we'll just hire a packer to, you know. So I had to go out and get Trevor and Daryl, Trevor's dad. They were flying in. So after day four, basically, I went out to try and find a packer. Those guys kept hunting. And then I picked up Trevor and Daryl. And so when we got out, we couldn't get a hold of a packer. And
did you have one kind of lined up or at least know who to call beforehand, or you were literally just looking for something?
We honestly didn't feel like, oh, well, we'll go there, kill a bull, pack it out, and then go back in. Well, the country and how rugged it was and distance, it was like
two bulls down.
Two bulls down, and you know, and other opportunities that were coming close, you know, it's like a matter of time before we put another one down. And then so what ended up happening is I went into meat mode after Trevor and Daryl. I think so day like six through eight, I think.
Yeah, something like that.
I made trips out, and then one day Ty and Steve packed meat with me. And then the next day we actually found a camp in there that had a horse that they'd rented, and so we wrangled them down, negotiated.
Well, we did the backcountry negotiation.
Yeah, Trevor carried in a $100 bill in his Mino harness for this kind of case. And he's like, hey, I'll give you $100 to borrow your horse for the day. And they're like, perfect. Sounds great. So nice. We literally
had. It was a godsend.
Yeah, we borrowed, I think her name was Rose or something like that. Giant draft horse. I mean, the track and the trail was like a paint can bucket.
Goodness.
I mean,
big horse.
Yeah, and so we actually packed that entire Trent's bull out on that horse in one trip. We led it to the trailhead and ran to town and then came back in the next day. So that's basically, I spent 3 days packing meat, you know, with my bull, 2 days, and then a day for his. And then we went back in for the last week, the duration, 7 days.
So you took the meat, when you said into town, you took it and went to a processor or went and had it hanging in a freezer?
Yep, took it to a processor. Yeah. So,
man. So, I mean, we talk about like tips and tactics and strategies and stuff all the time, right? But, I mean, you just laid out a story where you guys come from out of state, go to Colorado for the first time, almost kill a bull on day one, and then turn around and kill a bull on day two, and then another bull on day three. How much of that, like, obviously you always have some, like, luck in your favor, right? I mean, you have to for hunting success. But what other things do you attribute that success to? Like, was it preseason scouting? Was it, you know, e-scouting? I mean, finding the spot? Like, you know, there's guys who are, like, so jealous of your story right now. What advice do you have looking back at it?
Luck.
Yeah.
A lot of luck. I'm glad to be totally honest with you. To be totally honest with you on the whole scouting thing, we've killed, I don't know how many bulls on film. How many is it, Cody?
We've killed, I think, 52 bulls since 2007. 52
bulls or so on film. And not to mention the ones that we missed and stuff. But we've never, ever, ever once scouted a bull that we've ever shot. We've never seen a bull before we've shot it. So that rules out the scouting technique thing right off the bat.
But like going to this area, I guess, how did you scout?
We just threw a dart at a board, honestly.
Literally got a the year before we hunted in Wyoming and met a guy, and when we were talking to him, he's like, yeah, you can hunt Colorado every year over the counter because Wyoming's a draw for non-residents. And so it kind of piqued our ears, and we just started going through and figuring out units to hunt based on statistics from the Colorado deal, and then started making phone calls from there, you know. And that was the crazy thing is just in the last 10 years of how much information is out there now. I mean, it was always somewhat available. You just had to you know, pretty hard to figure it all out. And now there's, you know, some services out there, that you can, you know, kind of find all that information in one spot. So, you know, I mean, we didn't really Google Earth that. We kind of, you know, shot from the hip on where we were going in. You know, Steve's hunted with me before. We kind of fly by the seat of our pants a lot of the times. I mean, to be honest, and I think the biggest thing that's attributed to our success in the past is just the drive and determination, and then time in the field. I think time in the field is probably the number one thing for us.
Yeah, I mean, you say that you just killed two bulls in 3 days,
right? Yeah. But I will say, I think our biggest factor in success is working together. Work together. And when you get, especially elk hunting, I don't think it could happen deer hunting. I really don't, just because, you know, elk hunting is a total different thing where, you know, you can sound as loud as you want and you can still kill one. So, I mean, it's one of those things where if you work together and do this as a team, I think that's attributed to 100% of our success is working together.
For sure. Yep.
That's awesome. That's too cool to hear.
I know. I'm excited to hunt with these guys here. And we're coming up, and it's not even that far away.
Wait. Dude, less than a month.
I can't wait. It's going to be so much fun.
A blast. Hopefully learn a thing or two.
Yeah. I mean, in our, we're not, I guess, for per encounter. I mean, we make errors, but we push. I mean, I would say the other thing is that we run the risk of busting something versus not going after it. Because if you know, say, oh, well, the wind's, you know, I mean, there's, I guess we're not hunting specific animals. We're not targeting something big, you know, or that case. So if we mess one up, it's like, okay, well, we'll go find another one.
We'll cover like 13 miles a day, just in a big loop. A lot of times just looking for that bugler, you know, just looking for that one that wants to play. And so, yeah, definitely. Like Cody was saying, it's not like we're after that specific, you know, we haven't named our elk or nothing like that, or have cool names. We need to start doing that. That would be cool. But we have never
ever
named
it after you shoot it.
We could do that. Yeah, that's
we've named bugles before.
You could tell bugles, actually. You can. Yeah, that is one thing that we have named a couple. But yeah,
you guys strategic when you start your day, and that like you've looked up a map and go, okay, we're gonna hike to, you know, this ridge, and if nothing's here, we're gonna work the ridge system this way or drop down into this canyon? Or is it literally just get to a point, call, if you don't hear anything, you know, start hiking into the wind and go figure it out?
So the way we do it is we have shooter caller. We usually try to at least hunt in teams of three, if not more. Sometimes you have to, you know, teams of two, just for what's going on, you know, if the other guys are packing meat or whatever's going on. But what we do is the caller is always the caller. The cameraman's always the cameraman, and the shooter makes all the calls. So that morning when he wakes up, if Cody's shooter, it's, hey, Cody, where do you want to go today? And if he says, I want to go to Hell's Canyon, you go, oh, awesome, cool. And you follow him and get drug through Hell's Canyon. So the shooter always makes the call on where they want to go, and all of that. And so, okay. Yeah, that's the way we have some rules. There is actually some kind of a method to the madness, but, but yeah, definitely. Like, the other rule is the filmer cannot call, cannot do, he's not caller. He doesn't carry his binoculars. He doesn't do any of that. He is strictly there to document the hunt via video. And so, I mean, yeah, there's definitely rules in the past that we've had to kind of jot down because, you know, it can get kind of crazy at times, as elk hunting does. So, but yeah, to answer the question, it's all depending on the shooter and where they want to go.
Yeah, I mean, there is somewhat of a strategy, but it's more like a ridge system itself.
And, yeah. You know, and we try to make it like a big loop, you know, just to end up. But now, like in the last couple of years, Cody and I have been hunting with camp on our backs. And so we'll break camp every single morning and be mobile. And so that could put us on a whole different ridge system, that, you know, that evening. And then you don't have to make that big loop to where you may be covering ground that, you know, that you already covered once. And so, yeah, so I mean, that's just a different way of hunting. And I'm not saying that, I don't know if we'll be doing that on our hunt or not, but it's definitely an option that we have that works out pretty good.
And the big part of it, we definitely get out of the bottoms and try to get up mid mountain or higher, just for the sake of our calling style is to be, you know, vocal, and hear the response. A lot of times, like being down in the creek bottoms, you know, the volume just doesn't carry and the response won't carry. So we try to definitely get, you know, at their level or above them to locate. And then we can have a great plan about going hunting this big mountain, but we hear something down below us. I mean, we'll just drop straight, you know, we'll chase any bugle wherever, it doesn't matter.
Right. Yeah.
So you're not necessarily like, you're not super strategic in that you're, worried about bedding and feeding grounds and what they're going to be doing here and there. You're just traveling, covering country, trying to find one that's bugling.
Correct. Yeah. But our favorite time, with that said, is hunting them out of their bed. So, I mean, that midday, like we've killed the majority of our bulls, I would say, from 11 to 2 p.m.
Great time to hunt, especially when everybody's back at their truck sitting on their ass.
Yeah.
Oh, totally. Yeah. It's and it's for us, for calling, like strategically, a bull that's got, you know, with some cows and they're bedded down, 9 times out of the 10, you're going to get a better response of that bull coming to you. He's comfortable. He knows where all the cows are at. Everyone's safe. They're chilled down. He's going to investigate if he's got an intruder versus when they're up early morning feeding or late night. They're, you know, a lot of times people are like, oh yeah, the bull just kept pushing his cows away from me, pushing his cows. Well, it's not necessarily that he's pushing his cows away, but they're already headed in a direction to go bed. And so you're trying to play catch up. And we've had it to where, you know, we'll chase them. And then they shut up. We give them an hour, crack one off, and they'd been, you know, bedded down. We'll find them again and then go in there and kill them, you know, midday. So overly aggressive.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I think it's a solid strategy with elk, really, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, though, like the places that we hunt, like different wildernesses and Forest Service land, as far as, like we said before, we don't have them named. I mean, and we don't have the threat of, quote unquote, pushing them out of the country. You know what I mean? People, you know, they won't do it because the wind's not just right. And so they don't want to approach that animal because and afraid to bust him out of their draw or their canyon that they hunt or whatever. We don't really have that. We
prefer, I mean, of our experience, hunting brand new country versus stuff that we've hunted in the past.
Why is that? I think
it's the adventure. I do.
Yeah. Two things. It's the adventure and it's the unknown, where if you have been there in the past and have a certain experience, your expectation levels are set to that, wherever it is. It could be poor, it could be high. And, you know, it can dictate. I can see in it, and we've experienced this over, you know, we have gone back to the same spot and it wasn't the same experience that we had the year before. So on day 2 or 3, the morale's already changed versus in a brand new spot, you push. I mean, we've kind of pushed harder and harder. Yeah. And it's like, I want to go over that ridge. I want to go over that mountain. I want to go explore over here. We haven't been here yet. And I think also too, with those somewhat expectations of how you experienced, you judge your movements based on that. And that may not be the best case because this year the animals, you know, snowpack was different or anything else changed a lot of those factors that you may not, you know, attribute to what why they were there last year. And you may hunt the same spot over and over, hoping that it's going to be what it was last year. And, you know, in a new spot, I think, you know, mentally you're just keyed into, you know, seek that adventure and go further, do, you know, not necessarily further, but you're going to push yourself a little bit harder to kind of prove yourself like, wow, this was worth it. So,
yeah, that's good. I'm headed into an area that I hunted 3 years ago. And when we were there 3 years ago, I mean, we just found like the ideal spot, the ideal scenario. They, you know, bulls were just fired up and all over us and were covered up. But I've been taming those expectations of like, yeah, I want to go check that spot out again, but I'm totally not counting on it, you know, because as you said, it's just things are different every year.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. That being said, Steve, I'm hoping it's like it was. Yeah. If it falls on its face, Steve, I want to just say I'm sorry now. I'll just
throw that out. No, that where we're going in Colorado is with Steve and Lenny, Tyler and Jason. We're taking it back into where we experienced where we killed those bulls. So we have been back there once before, but the next year that we went in there, that was 2013. That's on the YouTube series right now. We went back in there 2014 and spent, I think, 6 days, and we only killed one bull in that 6 days and didn't have as many encounters, but we also were shifted back on the calendar to the, like the first week of September versus mid September.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Hopefully, you know, and there's so many different variance factors of weather and
forest fires or whatever the year before for numbers,
pressure, the winter week prior, kill,
whatever. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
This episode of the Hunt Backcountry podcast is brought to you by First Light. You guys go check out firstlight.com if you haven't already to see the vast array of technical performance apparel that First Light has to offer. It's amazing to me as I'm getting ready to take off on a week-long hunt how little and few clothing pieces I can get away with. As we all know, hunting in the backcountry, hunting in the mountains, you never know what conditions you're going to get. It's incredibly variable. But with First Light, their system works together so well with a few key layering and insulation pieces, you can really be set for a wide variety of conditions. Go check out firstlight.com and everything that they have to offer. You guys haven't hunted 10 years together, not just the two of you, but other guys involved with Born and Raised Outdoors. You know, certainly over that time, there's good and there's bad in terms of the experiences you share together. But what do you attribute to, like, the longevity of you guys being able to hunt together? And then tie that into, you know, we get a lot of questions from guys who are like, man, I wish I had an elk hunting partner. Or I wish I could find a partner like this or like that. So on that topic of elk hunting partners, given the longevity that you guys have had, what's kind of some things to look for, some tips on your success, really, in terms of just having solid partners?
Good question. Good question. Nobody wants to see the band break up, right?
Right, yeah.
So, I mean, you know, yeah, to say that, oh, no, we just all get along all the time and it's just the way it is that you see on film would be a blatant lie to you. So, but that being said, we get along way better than most people do. So there's always going to be in any, you know, you get a group of guys that are five deep, you're going to have conflicts and you're going to have disagreements. I've seen Cody and Ty roll around.
And who came out on top? Now we're getting into it.
Well, it was like a back when women's UFC wasn't even really big. It was kind of like that.
Two was guys it like open-handed way. Stuff?
Yes.
Yeah.
I was trying to pull his hair, but he didn't have any.
He didn't have any.
Go for the goatee on Ty.
I mean, it does happen, and there's definitely issues, but we've always had kind of rules in the team to where, okay, if you have an issue, we bring it up as a team. We all talk about it. It's more of a family kind of scenario than anything else. And that's the way we set it up, and that's the way we started at it. And so it's we try to handle the situations as they come as soon as possible and not let them fester and stuff, because it can make a season. I mean, it's really tough out there away from your families and you're trying to shoot this film. It's not and people, I guess, I don't know if it's understandable, but we're trying to create something with film and with doing what we're doing here. And it's one of those things where it's not like we're just out there having fun and we're just hunting. You know, we are having fun. We are just hunting. But at the same time, we're still trying to create something that we can share with people after we get back. And we know everybody's going to see what we're doing. And so, yeah, it's definitely a disciplined thing. You've definitely got to keep all those things in check with each other. And everybody has to be on the same page. And I think we've done a good job with it. I really do. I mean,
and we all have an open, you know, here's like we have a goal as a team, and it's not so much individual. And so for each of us, we're willing to sacrifice our entire season for somebody else to succeed. And I think the selflessness in what we do, each one of us all feel that same way. Like I'm just as excited to have somebody else pull the trigger as I am, if not more, you know, and to be able to capture that and share that. And so, you know, I think for the tips for people that are looking for a hunting partner is you better make damn sure that you guys have the same expectations. And, you know, I've talked to people that their friends, you know, were hunting with them. As soon as they killed something, they were gone for the season. You know, they were checked out. They weren't there to help. They weren't, you know, it's like, oh, I've got mine. Now I'm going to go fishing the rest of the fall for salmon instead of be there to call and help pack meat. So, you know, you better make sure that if you're willing to make a sacrifice, that person's willing to sacrifice for you and, you know, and make it a team event. And whether that's, you know, in the end all, if it's, hey, if we kill an elk, we're going to share the meat between the families. If we only kill one, if there's two of us, or, you know, like whatever kind of bond that you guys can help each other with, to kind of grow. And then you, and I think, you know, is to have those gut check experiences after the season. You know, if things didn't quite pan out the way that you hoped it would, sit down and have the conversation, you know, and have a real frank, communication. And that's what's really helped us. We always sat down. We kind of, you know, it was the New Year's meeting. We'd sit down and each one of us kind of in a round table discussion, you know, here's what I felt I did good. And here's what I felt I did bad. And then, you know, it was kind of like the alcohol. Hi, Trent. Thanks for, you know, but it helped in some places where I know early on before, you know, that bond has been built in the mountains of the brotherhood. And I would say as we were kind of working our way through this, I mean, Trevor had never even met Ty until he hunted with him the first time. You know, I had known him for a lot of years and Trent had hunted once with him. And so really when we started this, we hadn't as a group really hunted together that much. And so we kind of built that bond early on. And I think those the first couple years and the initial challenges that we struggled through has built what it is today.
Yeah. Definitely about sacrifice and about selflessness.
Yeah.
I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's crazy. Like, I mean, it's a fortunate position to be in to find that guy or those guys that you can hunt with like that. And it's when it's actually true. I mean, it's one thing to say like, oh, I'm just as happy if he pulls the trigger, right? If he notches the tag. Like, it sounds good.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's like, if that's true, I mean, that's you know, like, irreplaceable in terms of hunting, you know?
And we've realized, too, what we've got is pretty special, especially after the YouTube channel and seeing all the comments. I bet every, what, third to fifth comment is, wow, you guys have something special with the brotherhood and you guys work so well together. And I mean, that's everybody notices that. And that's really kind of driven it home. Just reading those things, it's like, wow, we do really have something special with that. So
let's talk about what's coming up, not only with this hunting season, but with the project that you guys have coming called Land of the Free. I'm glad we talked backstory because if guys just catch this project and see you guys take off, I want them to know it's not an overnight success, right? It's like the 10-year overnight success.
Big hit.
But let's talk about this project and where you guys are headed for the upcoming season. So I guess before we get into maybe some of the specific hunts, just kind of give us the big picture, the 30,000 foot view, Cody, of what's coming.
Yeah, no, we're super excited. You know, this has kind of been a brainchild for quite a while. But basically we kind of came to the concept, like, let's showcase what Western hunting is, elk hunting, and how you can do it on over-the-counter opportunities. So we sat down, looked at it, and we picked out five states. And so we're going to start, and we're going to do this over a 45-day period, plus or minus, pretty much. And Trent's the one that's going to be the whole anchor of this whole thing, because he's going to be on every day of the whole entire adventure. But basically, we're going to start here in Oregon, hunting Roosevelt's. Then we jump over to Wyoming on a general tag, and then down to Colorado, back up to Idaho, and then finish off in Montana. So all these places are, anyone that can go do this. It's not a high points draw or anything like that. So we just wanted to share what elk hunting is to us. And then as we kind of dove into this, it's like, man, really, we want to share it with some of our close friends. And that's where this whole collaboration effort came together. And so we started talking with like Steve and Lenny and Tyler and Jason. They're going to join us in a certain state. So first off, in Oregon, the Hush guys from Salt Lake and Eastern Idaho are going to come out. We're going to take them Roosevelt hunting. So BMAC, Brian and Casey are coming out, and we're going to take them Roosevelt hunting here. And then Trent and I take off on the 31st of August and drive, meet in Boise and meet Corey Jacobson, Dirk Durham, and Donnie Drake, the guys from Elk 101, and go to Wyoming and hunt with them. Trent's got a tag in that state. That's when he's going to kill his big 6-point.
Giant.
Yeah. Corey, Dirk, and Donnie hunted this area last year. They all killed monster 5-points, but they saw some big sixes.
They were there.
Trent. Exactly.
Yep. I'm already pouring through the names.
And so then on Sunday the 10th is when the old Pure Elevation boys in EXO meet up with us in Colorado. And then from Colorado, we'll be in on that hunt and through Wednesday the 20th, I believe is what it
is. Something like that.
Yep. Yeah. And then come out. And that's when I'm going to head home. And Trent is going to drive up to Idaho and meet back up with the Hush guys. And Trevor comes out from Oregon and meets in Idaho. And Trevor's going to hunt in Idaho. So each one of us have a tag in each state. So just one tag for us and then tags for the other people that are going with us.
That's so we can intermingle. I mean, our biggest goal here is for the collaboration side to be able to hunt with Steve and call for him or whatever. It's going to be so much fun kind of going outside our little, you know, our little community of brothers. So it'll be awesome.
Yeah. Lenny and I were talking about that when we were up at the death hike, and we were just talking about, you know, you get so used to hunting with somebody and then just doing things your way, right? Like the Pure Elevation guys, like you have so much experience hunting with one another, but if you get with another guy or another group, it'll be really interesting to see how strategies change and approaches change. So I'm sure there'll be a ton of cool stuff just coming out of that.
Oh, just I think the knowledge base and experience, you know, vice versa around all of this. You know, I'm looking to learn a ton from everyone.
Oh, big time.
You know,
big time.
That's as much as exciting as the hunt side of it. So then we'll be in Idaho until the season closes there, the 30th. And then Trent rallies up north to Montana. Trevor will come home, and then Steve will drive out to Montana. And then we're going to meet Jason Phelps, John Gabriel, Nick Schmidt, Charlie Smith, and then their other buddy. I haven't met him yet.
No idea.
Yeah. And we'll then hunt in Montana because that season goes until mid-October. So we'll have some opportunities. You know, that's kind of like that extended opportunity of archery elk. So that's how we're going to able to make this thing last for 45 days.
Yeah. So every hunt's going to be archery, right?
Yep. Every hunt's going to be archery elk. Yep. Yeah.
And that's awesome.
So that was a general license bought on the leftover. Mm-hmm.
So Trent, you're on the road for the 45-ish days straight.
Yeah. The divorce happens right after
that's literally what I was getting ready to ask.
October, somewhere in there. Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, I mean, literally, that's what I was going to ask. Are you married? Are you going to be married?
Yeah. I have a great, great wife, and I have two kids. And this will actually, I was just talking to Cody about this just a couple hours ago. But yeah, I'm nervous as heck. I'm not going to lie. I am. I'm just, it's going to be something totally outside the box. I mean, I remember like on that Colorado hunt, we were gone for, what was it? 14 days or something.
I think total 16? With travel, I think we're gone for 17 or 18.
17. And last year I hunted Idaho for 19, I think, maybe. Gosh, somewhere in there.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, 45. That's a whole different number there. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Dude, I normally do like 10 days, and that's pretty brutal, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Goodness.
Yeah. It's going to be emotional. I think it'll be kind of neat to document it all, film it all, and it'll be a roller coaster, to say the least. I guarantee it, between the hunting and then the camaraderie between friends, and then the saving grace that I have. I don't think I could, like, me and Cody would kill each other if we did it that long straight, I think.
But we work with each other every day.
But you know, it'll be a new set of people every 10 days or so. So I think that'll be a little bit of new life to the conversations and stuff. But it's going to be totally different than I've ever done before. That's for sure.
Yeah. What are some of the practical things that you're paying attention to just to prepare for this much time on the road? I mean, obviously you're not going to spend 45 nights in the backcountry. You'll be, you know, getting refreshed and hitting town and things between, but even things like, I mean, seriously, like food. I mean, are you paying extra attention to, like, you don't want to eat Mountain House for 30 dinners? I mean, that type of
thing. We added it up. It's over $1,000 in Mountain House just for the dinners, I think. No.
We were actually working through right now, just getting, like, we're going to do some freezer bag, or we're doing freezer bag meals for the first hunt, because Wyoming will be the cool thing is it's not all backcountry hunt. So it for us, it's a little bit different. You know, because that's how, like, here in Oregon, you know, our backcountry has been mountain bikes. And so we've gone in with mountain bikes and used that road system like a trail system in a wilderness. And you know, it's all lightweight gear. And so we've never really truck camped or had a big base camp. And so each hunt's a little bit different in the dynamics. So in Wyoming, it will be, we're in heavy grizz country. So we've got to be, you know, very careful how things are managed there, which that's a totally different dynamic than what we've ever experienced before. But yeah, the meal wise, so that hunt's going to be based out of a truck, where we can have freezer meal or groceries itself. They got a bear box there and that. So, and then Colorado
is going to be our toughest.
That'll be legit. The same. It'll be the same as what we've normally done in the years past. Yep. Backpack food, but that's been Trent has been his staple. Has always been beef stroke Mountain House. He did it last year for 2 weeks straight in every single night.
Hard to beat,
dude.
I'm still not regular.
I was gonna say
no. I can eat the same thing every day. I'm just like. I don't really mind it too much, and so. But now, when you put on 45 days,
right.
I don't know. There needs to be a little variation there. So
this is probably 10 years ago. I bought like a bulk bin of Mountain House like chicken teriyaki, and that's all I ate for like two years. To this day, I can't smell it, man. I literally get, like, if someone has it, I gotta walk 20 feet away because I want to throw up. So yeah. 10 days in a row of beef stroganoff, that's rough.
Oh yeah. Horrible.
No, we were looking at trying to get a freeze dryer so we could do our own meals, but just budget wise couldn't piece it together to make it happen. And then I've been seeing some stuff. You've been doing some dehydrated foods lately, is that right, Mark?
Yeah, I have, and really been digging it. I mean, it's I don't know. To me, I don't see myself going back to Mountain House. I mean, anything from being really intentional about making something and then dehydrating it for that specific purpose, but then also just taking things that we eat anyway and taking the leftovers and being able to throw that into the dehydrator and repurpose that has been pretty awesome. But yeah, I mean, it's, you know, super simple. Like, one of the latest things I did was just, you know, cook up 2 pounds of ground elk, dehydrate that, cook up some servings of like a long grain rice, throw in some dehydrated like bell peppers, jalapenos, I mean, whatever you want to do, But I mean, yeah, it's just so super simple, and testing the rehydration of this stuff and making sure it's actually going to be legit in the field. I mean, it's all turned out great, and it's kind of, I was not nervous, but you know, I had some like hesitation about getting into it, because it, in my mind, it was like, what if I screw it up? What if I do it the wrong way? But the whole process is incredibly forgiving.
And yeah. Is it, can you pretty much replicate most all normal meals? I mean, with that?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of stuff. Yeah.
Okay.
A lot of stuff.
That's what I was kind of, cause I've heard the elk burger trick, and I've heard of the tomato paste, you know, putting it on there for spaghetti and, you know, stuff like that. But I was just wondering how far can you go with that? I mean, I guess you could, you know, pull the water out of anything, but
yeah, I mean, you can do pasta based stuff. If you want to do a spaghetti style, you can do like a, you know, I did that rice and meat. I've done like pulled pork, and dehydrated sweet potatoes. I mean, there's been a ton of, like, obviously stuff like chilies and stews are super easy.
Right.
Yeah. It's a pretty good process. And then even making other snacks, which I have been eating year round now anyway, but taking something like some dehydrated fruit and mixed nuts, yeah. Not only good for the field, but I've just been killing that stuff, all the time, really. And my kids have as well. So I've enjoyed it for sure, getting into it, and glad to be doing it.
Yeah. Another thing we're going to try to do is process meat along the way too. So we're taking a big trailer, enclosed trailer with us, and we have all the, big giant cutting boards and tables and grinders and cubers and you name it. And we're going to try to package the elk along as we go, take, like, you know, because if we all jump on it, we can slam out an elk, you know, in a few hours. And so try to do that along the way too, to show people and to film that and video it and to show just doing that. We get a lot of questions on, well, how do you guys process game, and how do you, you know, all the way down to how do you skin an animal, you know? And so, and we've never showed that kind of stuff before. So this gives us a great chance to show it off.
So yeah, we're taking a small chest freezer generator, get that frozen. And then, we're doing a test for dry ice to see exactly how long that frozen meat will last.
That's going to be good stuff. That's going to be good content, good knowledge to have out there.
Yeah. The big worry is this Colorado trip, because Trent's going to kill one in Wyoming. And so
that's the 6 by 6, right?
Optimistic. Yep, very optimistic.
Yeah. Luther. How long that will work, you know, because we just don't want to have to go back out to the trail. But I mean, that's the whole deal. And it's one thing that we actually haven't talked with the group of, who, you know, when someone kills something, are we all jumping to the pack meat, or are we a couple guys going to shuttle meat out and go to town, or however that's all going to work out. But
you mentioned the citric acid previously. Can you talk a bit about that? It's something that I've packed but haven't had to use yet. But for guys who might be curious about that, what goes into using the citric acid?
Yeah, it's a super, super simple. I got it from the Caribou Game Bags company, and it's just a little spray bottle and a powdered form of this citric acid you mix water in, and it helps. I think the two things is it's a bug deterrent for flies, and second, it helps create that crust on the outer side of the meat, and that's the biggest thing. If the first night, if you can get a crust on meat and get the moisture off of it, you're going to be leaps and bounds ahead of, you know, getting any microbial type started, you know, where that meat can start to sour. So we spray that citric acid on the meat itself, on the game bags themselves, keep it where there's, you know, airflow coming, you know, so it's not covered. And you know, the hard part, like, if you do a bone, I would recommend not boning until you're going to pack.
Definitely.
Keeping them on meat on the bone. And because otherwise, there's two things. When you bone in the field right then and there and say you're going to hang that meat for three to four or five days, you're better off to do bone in. You have less surface area where you're going to lose, you know, crust, and just your loss of the meat's not going to be as high. And two, it's really hard to get, when you have a boned out bag, all that meat kind of just piles on top of each other, makes a big old ball in the bottom. And it's really hard to get all of that meat good and cool, where on a quarter, in that, even, you know, we'll take and cut down to the ham bone and kind of get that open, that section. But otherwise, you know, keep all that meat on the bone. And then, man, in September at, you know, high elevation, it can get up to 65 degrees, 70 degrees in the day, but it's, that meat has been completely fine hanging it for 5-6 days back there. As long as those nights get cold and that meat, you know, you've got it in the shade, not out in the open sun, and it's got airflow on it with that citric acid.
And the biggest thing too is get those game bags on it. Don't, the fly blow is the worst that yep. time of year. That's pretty much your worst enemy is going to be the flies blowing on it. So, I mean, get those things in game bags, get them cooled off. And like Cody said, you know, bone it out before you pack it out. But when you're going to hang it, don't bone it out, because it, that does, it just, it forms into a ball, like he said, and then there's little pockets of pooled blood in between. You can't thoroughly hang them to drain them to get them how they should be. So definitely do not cut into all the meat right off the quarters. And we've go as far as to bring extra, like our footprint, we use Tyvek house cover for our footprint for underneath of our tents. And so if you do have some weather coming in, we'll take our footprint from it, from, and just not use it underneath our tent, and drape it around the quarters and tie it at the top of them so the rain doesn't get on them. And then we'll put like branches or boughs or something around those around the quarters also, so it runs off the rain too. So moisture is a big thing. Moisture is huge. You don't want them to get all wet and damp.
And you don't want
quarter, that just grows bacteria.
And you don't want quarter meat bags touching each other.
Yeah, leave some air in between each bag. So we'll take a stick, like a forked stick on each end, and put it in between the bags to get them separated also for all the quarters.
And most of the time now we've actually like forgone, we don't bring nylon cord for hanging meat bags. Usually we use those caribou bags, and or like a tag bag, and the cord, the parachute cord that's in the top of that, you'll run a half hitch around underneath where the bag entrance is, if that makes sense. So it actually slides down over the top of the bag,
the collar of the bag,
the collar,
yeah,
the half hitch, and hang that back up, and then use that cord to hang it on a branch. And we've actually found hanging it underneath a, you know, a decent sized tree that's like a, say, a 10 inch diameter type tree, usually have strong enough limbs, and it's got good cover for rain from up above as well, instead of having to make a meat pole or anything like that. And then I'll hang it right there against the tree on the limbs itself.
Perfect. Yeah, that's good stuff.
Great tips. But, yeah.
Yeah. But we literally have hung meat for, I think the longest it's gone is 7 days.
Oh yeah. Easy.
Out in the field, in the backcountry.
Keep it dry, keep it cool at night, and it'll hang for, everybody's got that old grandpa, right? Everybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
I hung that thing out in the shop for 3 weeks and cut the mold off of it. It was the best tasting son of a bitch I've ever had.
Tender. You know?
Yeah. Tender.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody's got that, you know?
Yeah.
It's not going to, it's yeah. Definitely. So just if you take care of it, and if you know the conditions, you know, and you can prep for certain little things like keeping it dry and stuff, it'll last a long time.
Yeah, cool. So to wrap up with, we've talked about you guys hitting all these states and hitting all these hunts. What we didn't fully cover, what the end result of that is and what's going to come of that in terms of this video content. So circling back to the beginning, you guys are hitting it hard with YouTube. How is this whole trip, these 45 days, these 5 hunts, going to roll out and be shared through video?
Yeah, so the coolest thing with digital content, like before, you know, we were kind of limited to the hour, hour and a half DVD for a season, and now we can literally tell that day-by-day story. So that's what we're going to do, is roll out on November 1st, Wednesday, November 1st. We'll roll out 45 daily uploads on the YouTube channel, and it will be pretty much a day by day adventure and encounter of what's going on. Some videos may be 6-7 minutes long, and some might be 45 minutes long, just depending on how things flow. And it was kind of interesting. We, you know, with what this Colorado day by day thing has done just recently, people have really, you know, you get to include more in the story, that the struggles, and we found that people really enjoy, you know, seeing not just the highlight reel basically, but seeing, you know, the real and rawness of it all. So that's what we're really excited to be able to do and share on that day-to-day basis. And I think it'll be interesting to hear the comment or see the comments and feedback from people. But we're just, there's no script. It's real. It's raw. And try to keep it uncut as much as possible and, you know, still in a good quality professional manner. So it's going to be an adventure for sure.
I know. I can't wait.
I know. I'm excited.
Yeah.
So obviously go hit the YouTube channel, right? Give us the way to get the YouTube channel and subscribe now so that we don't miss it when it launches November 1st, and then any other places that we can follow you, whether that's, you know, social media feeds or a website or anything else.
Yeah, absolutely. So our everything lives and breathes at bornandraisedoutdoors.com. There's a video page there that is populated with all of our YouTube videos. You can check that out. But the biggest thing, go to the YouTube homepage, click the subscribe button. And all that's going to do is give you notifications when things start dropping. And then on Instagram, it's Born and Raised Outdoors. Facebook's Born and Raised Outdoors. YouTube's Born and Raised Outdoors. All the same channel. So,
and too, at our website too, we do have, we got hats and shirts, and we came up with our own call line because, anyway, we do a lot of calling. You'll notice that on the thing, so on our channel. So we came out with our own call line that we think are just our the cat's meow. So yeah, we have all those things too. Also on our website, if anybody wants to interact and wear some of our gear, we'd definitely love that too.
Yep, our fans are our lifeblood, and yeah. You know, I mean, it really is. Without that support, it, you know, it would have never got to the point where it is now. And so, yeah, we just thank everyone for tuning in and watching and giving comments and sharing with their buddies.
Yeah. Awesome. Guys, thanks for taking the time to join us. Not only good luck on the 45 days, but Trent, good luck with your marriage, man.
Oh, thanks, brother. I appreciate that.
All right. Thanks, fellas.
I hope you got a couch or something.
All right. Thanks. Have a good one.
Okay, guys. We'll see you.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for tuning in again. Stay tuned. Episode 100 is going to be huge. We have some awesome giveaways just for you guys to say thank you for following and supporting this show. As well, we want to hear how your hunting season goes. Shoot us an email to podcast@xmountaingear.com. Even more so, if you're an XO user, we want to see your field photos. But no matter what, we just want to hear your story. And even some of you are going to be featured on the show later this year. I've already heard some very, very cool stories of guys reaching out, and it's like, we have to get you on the episode here. So if by chance you have an awesome story that you think is worthy of an episode, maybe some lessons learned, anything like that, go ahead and reach out. podcast@xomountaingear.com. Stay tuned. Good luck with your hunts, and hope to talk to you soon.